TFM.
Fun will now commence.
Welcome back to The Journey, everyone, our dedicated Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, can I just ask you to please take your muddy shoes off before we get started?
I'm sorry, Chris. So, you know, what happens when you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain, you know, it just, you get muddy shoes, and I'm so sorry. I'll take those off right now.
You know, that's exactly the song that I thought of with this episode.
Oh man, you gotta escape, man. You gotta escape.
All right. Yes, everyone, today we're going to be continuing our 30th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Voyager with Episode 7 of Season 1. It's Ex Post Facto. And here's a quick rundown of the story. While visiting the planet Benia, Tom Paris and Harry Kim visit the home of a scientist and are greeted by his young wife, Liddell. When the scientist is killed, Paris is accused of the murder and sentenced to relive the victim's final moments every 14 hours for the rest of his life. The Benians believe that Liddell and Paris had an affair and lust led to murder. But Janeway isn't buying it, and Tuvok vows to find out the truth, one memory at a time. So, Matthew, when writing that short synopsis, I had to ask myself, as I often do, what are they doing on this planet? Like, why are they there in the first place?
You know, they make some vague reference to the fact that this scientist is some sort of, like, I guess, warp field specialist or something. So I guess they're trying to go faster, you know?
Go faster, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tom was going faster, that's for sure.
Yeah, he was. he hit the ground running. So,
yeah,
he was, as Van Halen would say, he was running with the devil. So
there is that kind of vague reference. But I think the reason I bring it up is that I wish that there was a stronger hook for why they're on this planet in the first place, because they're getting in trouble. So if they're going to get in this kind of trouble, it would be more satisfying to know that they were there for some really critical reason.
Yeah.
Whereas it comes off at the beginning like they're just hanging out and going to a dinner party.
Yeah, you see, Chris, Tom Paris didn't realize that he was in some sort of causality loop that threw him back into basically the same episode as TNG's A Matter of Perspective with a slight twist. Which is just basically we added a dog.
A dog, right?
Literally a dog. Not some sort of like space alien name for a dog, but just a dog.
Yeah. Not even space dog.
I hope I don't spoil my ratings or anything, but it's like legitimately one of the laziest episodes of Star Trek that I've seen. Many episodes of Star Trek are variations on a theme, but this one is not even a variation. It is just the same episode.
So speaking of the dog, although they didn't give it a fun name, they did try to make it look a little spacey. It's actually a Chihuahua, and they like blow dried its hair to make it really frizzy.
Yeah, I mean, it like, basically is a Chihuahua with a mohawk.
A Chihuahua with a mohawk.
Now, that
would have been cool if in Star Trek 4, if the punk on the bus had a Chihuahua with him who also had a mohawk.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So.
All right. So we've ragged on the opening of the episode enough here. But yeah, I've always thought of this episode as being very much like a matter of perspective. It came about because Michael Piller wanted to do a film noir episode, and apparently he was really into Pulp Fiction at the time, and so they came up with this concept. I will say that when it first aired, I did find the black and white opening to be interesting because it's something that we hadn't seen before in Star Trek. And that's what I remember most about the episode, actually, is the black and white opening.
Well, at least it's not Shades of Grey, Chris. The Billy Joel song or the TNG episode. So,
what if they had done Shades of Grey where the entire thing was in black and white, but they did the grading was different. So different flashbacks had like different contrasts and such.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, thank God they didn't do that.
Good, they didn't do that. All right. So, so after we get past that black and white opening, we jump to the ship and we get into your favorite plot line through the series, which is the Doctor trying to choose a name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But actually, I wanted to throw that out there because I know you love that whole joke. But I do think this part of the episode is quite good, even though it's brief, because, again, the interactions between Kes and the Doctor are really good. And they're good for both characters. Yep. They're well portrayed by both characters or by both actors.
I would actually agree with you that it's the best part of the episode because it's the part that is actually something new and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's a great continuity for the previous episode and for the characterization so that we're having these characters grow. And it's one of the interesting things that we're going to spend so much time on this thing and then we're never just, you know, going to do anything about it, which is incredibly strange to me because really, again, I love this part of the episode. I think it's great. I think Kes comes off fantastic. I love that we're also, you know, focusing on her learning, you know, medicine and being taught by the Doctor. We're really building their relationship together.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, actually, I would say in the beginning of Voyager, you know, the characters that seem like they're truly bonding more than anyone, even Harry and Tom happen to be Kes and the Doctor, and it's just so natural feeling. And so I got to give it to the writers. I think they're doing a great job with those two characters and really creating an interesting dynamic as you've got this one character who, you know, is at the beginning of her life. And then you have this other character who's basically at the beginning of his life, mm-hmm. and they're growing together.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, in some ways, like a Trill, you know, the Doctor has the programmed experience of hundreds and thousands of doctors and medical people from Starfleet. But his actual, like, personality and being mm-hmm. is very much coming into being the same way that Kes is. And mm-hmm. so, again, that's really good writing. It's very synergistic, if that's even a word, between those two characters. So,
yeah. Well, it is interesting that Kes is so young because she seems to have a lot more life experience and wisdom than you would expect from someone who's supposed to be alive for such a short amount of time, which then makes you ask questions about how the Ocampa's brains develop and such, given that their lifespans are quite short in the first place. But the dynamic between the two characters, you mentioned that she's learning about medicine, she's being taught by the Doctor. So the Doctor is teaching her how to have a role on the ship, how to be a nurse, and she's actually teaching the Doctor how to be a person, which I find interesting as a storyline. But once we move beyond that, to keep things a bit positive here, the core science fiction concept in the story, I think, is a really interesting one. It's this idea of can't get you out of my head, where the Benians have this system of trial and punishment where if you're found guilty, then you're forced to relive the memories of your victim. So in this case, it's a murder. They take the memory engrams from the deceased person and then they put them in a host. And then the host is used to present the memories to the jurists and the trial and the judges. And then afterwards, if the defendant is found guilty, they're implanted into the guilty person, and then they're forced to relive the crime over and over. And then on top of that, the twist at the end is that the enemies of the Binions are trying to smuggle the work of the scientist whose house they visit, Tom and Harry visit, by overlapping data onto these memory engrams. And then once Paris leaves the planet, they're going to capture him, and that's how they're going to actually get that information. So I think like all of this part of the story is a really interesting science fiction concept.
I think it's definitely an interesting science fiction concept. And I think the idea of this is punishment is fascinating, right? Because you just feel like, as Gnarls Barkley would say, you're going crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that as cool as a concept as it is, the frustration is that I really don't have any understanding of what the war is between these peoples.
Yeah.
You know, so as we were talking about, like, I don't understand really kind of why we're on this planet to begin with, mm-hmm. other than kind of vaguely. And so I only have this vague understanding that there's this kind of strange war going on, but it doesn't really seem to be affecting anybody that much because everybody on this planet seems just fine. And so there's no real stakes to the episode other than what's happening to Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's the thing where it's like everything about the episode feels like this script needed three or four more iterations to really drill into all of these concepts and ideas and really flesh them out in a way that makes everything feel much more substantial and I think in some ways even more terrifying and harrowing for the crew of Voyager, mm-hmm. and for Tom Paris. And we just never really get that sense, you know, and so it's just a very interesting thing. You know, there are, and this is not the only time that this has happened, mm-hmm. in Star Trek, where you just kind of have an episode where things just really don't quite come together. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, you know, famously, for me with Deep Space Nine, my best example is Prophet and Lace, where you have an idea and just nothing about that episode really comes together. Right.
Right.
And there are other Deep Space Nine episodes that are like that. There are TNG episodes like that, like Shades of Grey, as we mentioned. You know, there are definitely TOS episodes like that, or Enterprise episodes. I mean, every one of the series has these episodes where you're just like, oh man, you know, if they could go back and do that again, they would. Yeah, and so, but yes, the core concept of like taking some, the memory of the victim and their last moments and putting it into the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that really is very interesting. In fact, it seems like something you would do, like, remember with Deep Space Nine, where they do the episode with O'Brien, he's thrown into prison.
That's Hard Time, and this has some similarities to that. This aspect of the episode has similarities to that.
Yeah, because it's messing with his mind, making him think that he's actually been there longer than he has.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. So, like, Shades of Grey, at least there was a reason for that episode to be the way it was, which was the shortened second season because of the writer's strike and such. And also, it was common on TV back then to do flashback episodes, so...
Right.
Maybe not best to do one on Star Trek, but at least there was precedent for doing something like that on TV. But I think this one, you mentioned, like, you have an idea for a story. And I think that's where this interesting science fiction concept kind of got lost in the... Maybe lost isn't the right word, but they had the idea for the story. Like, we want to do a film noir. So that sets up sort of the way you're going to walk the viewer through the story, and even the way you're going to tell the story, even the dialogue to a large extent. I mean, some of the dialogue in this story is absolutely atrocious. So if you were to take it as just, this is the best the writers could do, it would be like, wow, these people shouldn't be writing for television because this is terrible. But in reality, it's like, it's written that way on purpose, right? To to pull you into that style of this old kind of corny film noir narrative. So, you know, it's something I think is done intentionally, but...
Yeah. This is one of the interesting things, too, and I wanted to talk to you about this because LeVar Burton directs this episode, and the performances that you get are always the preview of the director. They're the ones who are asking an actor to do what they want them to do. And we're at the beginning of the series, so these people don't really know their characters all that well.
Right. That's the first a key place. Point.
And I will say that this is not one of LeVar's better directed episodes because the performances that he's getting from, I would say, especially Robbie Duncan McNeil and Garrett Wong are not very good. Garrett Wong specifically is kind of very bad in this episode, I believe. His portrayal is just not great. And then, I know that Tom Paris was originally conceived basically as being a womanizer, and they portray him like that. They kind of put him in the Riker and, you know, the I would say stereotypical, and I do mean stereotypical because this is not really who Kirk was, but they give him that stereotype too. And then, of course, they change that over time because they realize, oh, that's not even who Robbie Duncan McNeil is. And he's much better playing a different version of this character than that. And so, yeah, but at this point, yeah, the whole thing in that sense of for the direction, I think, doesn't work. Whereas, as we talked about just a little bit ago, the part of the episode that does work so well is that small, soft scene between the Doctor and Kes where they're really digging in already to who these characters are and really nailing it. And the direction of that scene and the camera movement and everything, it's really good. It's really well done. And so,
Yeah. Well, so a few things with LeVar Burton directing this. I believe this is only his third episode of Star Trek that he directed. So he did two on The Next Generation, which were Second Chances and The Pegasus. And then the first one he did on DS9 was Indiscretion, but it came after this. It's later on in the series. So I think this is the third one. So this is early in his directorial career first. That's one thing. Another thing is, as you said, this was written before. I think this was actually written as part of the first batch of stories. So it was actually written before Robbie Duncan McNeil was cast as Tom Paris. So this was like the idea of who they had, who Paris was supposed to be, like you were saying, without knowing at all how the character would play out. And so the writing of the character itself in this episode is was not adjusted, I guess is what I would say. Like, yeah. I think they should have gone back before shooting this and made some adjustments for who the character had become through those first six episodes. And then another thing is that, like I was saying, when your starting point is, we want to do a film noir episode, if you're thinking about the type of story that you want to tell or that you want to portray, and it doesn't necessarily mesh with the vehicle, so the vehicle being Star Trek here, but you're kind of locked in like, okay, we're going to do a film noir style story. I think that can start to dictate too much of how you're approaching shooting it. And then the end result comes off as we see here. That may be part of it.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that John and I actually talk a lot about on Aggressive Negotiations, you know, this idea of, especially with Star Wars, the Clone Wars, one of the things that they do is they take genres and then they put those genres into a Star Wars format, right? So, and they do that famously with lots of different types of episodes that happen. So, I mean, you basically have a Godzilla episode and you have a noir episode, you have all, but they do it in a way that feels as though it's Star Wars. You never question that. It's just that's what they're kind of mirroring. And so I think you can absolutely do type of a noir type of story for Star Trek. In fact, I think, you know, in Deep Space Nine, they kind of have some of those in the later seasons, right? You know, I think of the some of the, like the seventh season episodes. There's some definite noir type of episodes in there where and I think Voyager will actually find that it's able to do some of those type of episodes later on.
I think it helps if your characters are settled more, right?
Yeah,
this is so early, and they didn't even, when they wrote it, they didn't even know who was going to be portraying the character, right? If your characters are settled more, then yeah, you could do it.
Well, and that's the type of thing, right? I mean, you know, this episode is meant to give us an insight into Tom Paris. And even that conversation, you know, he has with Kim, where he's like, you were supposed to be my conscience, you know, the one I never had. And then he tries to tell Kim, you know, this will happen to you. And it's like, well, no, this is never going to happen to Kim because this is not who he is, right? In some ways, akin to our conversation that we were having about invasive procedures in Varad the other day on the orb, this is very, I mean, Paris is trying to almost like not take responsibility for his actions because he's like, oh, that's just who I am kind of excuse, which is also kind of frustrating because it's almost like he doesn't really totally learn his lesson, or at least it doesn't feel like he totally learns his lesson, which is a little bit frustrating by the end of the episode as well.
So this was a point of contention actually between Michael Piller and Jerry Taylor, because they had contrasting views of how it turned out with Tom Paris. And Taylor was very upset about this episode because she felt like basically Paris is burning in this episode. Like they just like destroyed the character development that they had worked on through those first six episodes because she didn't think Tom would be a womanizer like this. And not at this point. I know he's conceived that way, but what they had done with him up to that point and then how Robbie Duncan McNeil had portrayed the character, he had evolved beyond that original concept. And this felt like it was just a reset back to that bare bones idea of who the character would be. And then Michael Piller thought that he actually came off really well here, which I don't have a strong feeling either way about, you know, whether he came off well or didn't come off well as a person. But I do think that as a character, I think that he does feel like an early version of the character that doesn't completely, it doesn't feel like a progression from the previous episode to this one, right?
No, I agree. And I think it's one of those places where, you know, you kind of stumble out of the gate early. You don't quite know who your characters are or, you know, even, and this is always the hard part, right? I mean, you know, they've seen Robbie Duncan McNeil in TNG previously, so they kind of know what he can do, but that's a long time from where we are now. And so they have this idea of kind of who the character is going to be. But yeah, I think it feels like it's really pushing instead of more organic. Whereas, you know, the beauty of Frakes is Riker. He just exudes that type of like confidence and like that he, again, it really is a sense of confidence. So he can kind of get away with that way more flirtatious type of personality. And so, yeah, it feels like they're almost trying too hard with the character Paris here instead of kind of letting the character come to them. And a big part of that is they're in the first season. And a lot of these scripts were very, very rushed here, especially at the beginning of the season. You know, Voyager had a really hard time with its production in the first place. I mean, they had to go back and shoot parts of the pilot while they're finishing up other episodes. And it just was not a very clean beginning to the series. And a big part of that, famously, is the fact that they start late anyway because they have to reshoot all the scenes with a new Janeway. And so there's just a lot of stuff that doesn't go great for them here at the beginning of the season. And I think this is one of the places where that's most apparent, that it kind of plays out that we're not all necessarily maybe on the same footing with even who we have as actors. Maybe, you know, like you mentioned, we've got scripts that are going out before we even get to see them on screen and how mm-hmm. they're playing these mm-hmm. characters and all that stuff. And so, yeah, I'm with Jerry Taylor. You know, I think this was not necessarily the best type of episode to do. In fact, I feel like if you'd wanted to do this episode, what you should have done is, you know, waited a few more, maybe till closer to the end of the season or something to see if this still worked. Mm-hmm. You know, like, do we feel like this character is in a place where this kind of storyline still works? Or from what we've seen from this actor and where we're kind of going with this character, this doesn't really work, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, I think the story could have been helped, even if it stays in the slot where it is. I think it could have been helped by tweaks. Like I said, go back. This is where the time crunch comes into play, right? But go back and adjust the Paris character a bit in the script to align more closely with where he is now. Now, that would be difficult, yeah. of course, because of, you know, the timing of how they shoot these things and produce them, get them out. And so that's where, like you say, push it to the end of the season, give yourself a little more time to work on it. And then the other thing is, as we mentioned before, just a little bit more information about why they're here, why they're involved in this, and what's going mm-hmm. on. So there is the reference, I guess, Neelix lets Janeway know that the Doctor was the creator of the Benian warships, and so that's why they should talk to him, because he's got some kind of, as you were mentioning, knowledge about how to go faster or something like that. But then later we find out that they're at war, and that the two warring sides used to live together on another, well, we don't know if it was another planet or this planet, but anyway, they're on two planets now. And so there's some kind of conflict going on, but there's really no explanation to what is going on there. And so
yeah,
that's where, when I was talking about the science fiction concept, the idea of smuggling this research off the planet by overlaying it on these memory engrams is really interesting, but it also feels like kind of a sudden twist, because I know if you're solving a mystery like this, of course you're going to find out something that you didn't know ahead of time. But if we at least had a little bit more idea that there's a stronger conflict between these people, the idea that it was all a setup to smuggle this information off would have made that revelation stronger. And yeah, so
I agree.
So and all of this could be accomplished by just giving a little bit more exposition here and there, just a few lines here
yeah.
and there. But
yeah.
This is why I feel like the idea for the film noir style and the murder mystery overwhelmed the details of the story.
Well, if you're going to do this type of story, you actually have to have all of the pieces come together. You know, mm-hmm. I have...
Like the end of a Seinfeld episode, right?
Yeah, or I've always loved the Thin Man series, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things about that series is like all the classic detective-type stories, like an Agatha Christie, at the very end, it all comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole story has been building all the pieces you need to put all that together. So there's the aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens here is that there aren't enough pieces actually put together in
right.
this episode mm-hmm. to allow you to have that aha moment.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it just feels like all this stuff was uncovered because Tuvok is able to do the mind meld and kind of see
right.
what's going on, rather than, yeah, because the fun in something like that, right, is when you go back and rewatch it, you can like spot all the bits and pieces that allow you to have that aha moment at the end, right?
Yes.
And that yeah. stuff's really not in here.
Right. Which, when you think about it, right, Star Trek VI is basically kind of a noir mm-hmm. mystery. And mm-hmm. how well done is that? Because you are given all the pieces to put it all together mm-hmm. by the time you get to the end. And so when you get the reveals, you're like, of course, yeah. that makes so much sense.
And then when that's you go back you and want. Watch it, you can spot every exactly. little thing, right?
And that's what you want in this. Yeah. And that's what they're going for. And mm-hmm. and they're just not able to get there. And so, you know, it's one of those places too where because everything is rushed, I almost feel as though that if you weren't as rushed, somebody would have been like, this just feels too much like a matter of perspective. We need to do some shifting in this episode so this feels more unique to Voyager and its story. Mm-hmm. And because this is also one of those things where in a lot of ways, this episode doesn't feel unique enough to Voyager itself that it can only take place on Voyager.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, really, the story, apart from the necessity of the mind meld to unravel the mystery, this doesn't even need to be a Star Trek story, right? This could be kind of any science fiction story. And
yeah. I mean, you could have just had hypnotism or something.
Yeah, you could have another mechanism meld, apart from the mind meld. So
yeah,
that's going back to what I feel about the idea of let's do a film noir is that the general concept of a film noir in this like murder by numbers plot, it takes precedent over making sure that it's a true Star Trek story. All right. Well, what are your final thoughts on this one and what's your rating?
Yeah. I mean, it might be my least favorite episode so far of the season. I will say though, Neelix much better in this episode, actually helpful. So that's great. So good for Neelix. You know, he rose in my estimation because of this episode, because again, he's actually being helpful in this episode, mm-hmm. which is awesome. And so, but I think this is probably 2 out of 5 Mohawk Chihuahuas because it actually never even gets to being half a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
It just never gets to that point, which is disappointing. And you know, again, Deep Space Nine had Move Along Home. You know, TNG had some serious clunkers. Code of Honor in season one. So, I mean, this is just kind of par for the course for Star Trek's first seasons.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. For me, it's just an episode. It's not an episode that I hate or dislike strongly or anything like that. It's also not one that I love. It's just the first season episode. It's just there. It's a memorable one for me because I still remember when it first aired and I remember that cold opening in the black and white. And I just thought, wow, that's different. And it stuck in my mind for that reason. And also Liddell and her bird feathers and kind of bebop little haircut there.
Yeah, so. We didn't talk about the costume design and the makeup, but I'm glad we didn't because it was not great.
I do find it interesting when they talk about the makeup design for this, though. And so you've got these two warring factions who used to live on the same planet. So they evolved on the same planet and they've both got these kind of ridges running on their foreheads and their noses, but they're different for the purpose of distinguishing them on screen so we know who is from which, you know, for that reason. So, and then, but the other thing is that they're described as being similar to the crowns of certain species of earth birds. And then I thought, well, yeah, from a costume, a makeup designer perspective, thinking about earth birds makes sense, but they're in the Delta Quadrant, so why would they be similar to earth birds? Right. That's not in the dialogue. Yeah. That's just sort of in the background of the episode. But anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. But when you've created so many aliens, you want to keep trying to find something new to do. Yeah. So having kind of like a bird-based look makes sense. So it's okay. But yeah, I think I've said all I have to say about this episode. So I'm going to give it 14 hours between each painful memory.
There you go. As this episode is.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on ex post facto. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose to the journey. And that'll come to Matthew and me through the little tiny microscopic wormhole that we discovered previously. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating or a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not rewriting baseline code algorithms, where can people find you?
Oh, I can't get enough of it, Chris. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Dressing02. Of course, I'm here on the network outside all the Star Trek talk on the 602 Club, talking about all those other franchises we love. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One's called Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, talking about Star Wars each and every week, as well as Owl Post, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. But Chris, where can people find you?
You can find me elsewhere on the network, doing all the shows with you, as well as in the back catalog of many shows. You can also find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y, and I'd love to chat with you there. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support us, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support, so thank you so much to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, looking forward to next time when there's going to be some emanations. I'm not going to tell you where they're coming from, but emanations are headed our way.
Ooh, I can feel it. Set course for home.